great search for truth. Every meaning has a meaning. Dark and light have their reasons. Live and learn are the seasons.
Bone days.
Bone days. With all that's left. Motions of everydayness and thoughts that won't leave. Leaving behind another sameness. Bone days. When all that's gone brings life to your knees. You don't know what to pray. So you keep making pleas.
This is Floyd Red Crow Westerman. You're listening to 89.3 FM, KAOS Olympia.
Becoming a KAOS member is an investment that benefits you and your community. Your membership dollars support the wide variety of non-commercial programming KAOS provides to our listeners, and the KAOS member card supports you with access to discounts from an amazing selection of KAOS patron businesses on an incredible variety of goods and services, available only to card-carrying members of KAOS. The KAOS patron businesses include Terry's Automotive Group, Wise Star Astrological Counseling Services, Orca Books, and Fire and Earth. For the complete patron business listing of all the discounts offered only to KAOS members, go online to chaosradio.org. Just click on Patron Business under the Join button.
Since 2002, Left Foot Organics has been growing food and community. Like all of us, people with developmental disabilities need opportunities to become involved in their communities. and to provide for their own financial support. You are invited to be a part of this community effort. Left Foot Organics offers workshops the third Saturday of every month where you can learn about fruit tree pruning, pickling, raising gourmet mushrooms, or attend a workshop on living with autism. On these Saturdays, you can volunteer on a work crew in the morning, eat a big, warm, and free farm lunch, and attend a workshop in the afternoon. There's also plenty of regular volunteer opportunities. To find out more, send an email to volunteer at leftfootorganics.org or visit leftfootorganics.org.
And you're listening to Make No Bones About It. This is Raven Redbone, and tonight I have Maria Treviso in the house. I actually have somebody in the room not calling me up, and it feels good to have the room full. And again, it's 5:06, and this is KAOS 89.3 FM. And I just wanted to let people know, to allow for our move back into the cab and our new studios, we will be going off the air at 9 a.m. on Wednesday, November 3rd. That means no Democracy Now! And the rest of our broadcasting schedule on that Wednesday. We'll remain off the air all day Thursday, November 4th as well. If all goes well with the equipment transfer, we will return to the airways on Friday, November 5th, day before my birthday, starting with Chaos Breakfast Special at 6 a.m. Thank you for your patience. And again, we're moving and back to the cab. It's exciting, even though we're the closest to the water over here, and I love being next to the longhouse and looking out over there and seeing deer graze. It's going to be good. It's going to be really good. And again, this is Make No Bones About It, and I have Maria with me. Can you hear me, Maria?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right. And I usually let people kind of share what's on their heart to say who they are, because you do that better than I would do that, just reading it, and we can start there.
Well, I'll start the way I was taught to introduce myself. Me llamo María de los Ángeles. Soy la hija de Leonardo Treviso, de Islera Pueblo del Sur, y la hija de María de los Ángeles Villa, que es Purapecha, de Zamora, Michoacán. I greet you in a good way, my relatives. My name is María Treviso. I'm the daughter of Leonard Treviso, an Islera man of the Islera Pueblo del Sur, first of Albuquerque, and then in one of the early relocations in 1680, moved to El Paso, Texas, Socorro, Texas. And my mother is María de los Ángeles Villa from Zamora, Michoacán, and she is Purapecha, formerly known as Tarascos, but that's a whole other story. But I greet you in a good way, and Brian, I want to thank you for bringing me over here and acknowledge your shameless self-promotion for your birthday. Jeez, already.
Well, you know, I just feel like it's an international holiday. Everybody, you said it earlier, every day is our birthday, so we have to put that out there, you know. And where are you going to be on your birthday?
I'm going to be north of the Arctic Circle. I'm going to be in Kiana, just a short 20-minute plane ride from Norvik, which is another short plane ride from Kotzebue in Alaska.
And we're excited to have you here, because every time I talk to Maria, she's on a plane going somewhere.
And a lot of work to do.
Yeah, and we like to have her here, and I'm excited. We've been wanting to do this
forever.
Forever. And it's just amazing to me, because there's been a lot of talk about what's going on in Indian country and the historical trauma, and I really wanted to touch base on that. And I also want to touch base, there's a lot of healing going on.
Yes.
And we have to first acknowledge that pain, and for me, the rest of America really has to listen. I had uncle on a couple weeks ago from Greenland, and we're talking about, until the red man is acknowledged, we're not going to go any further as a nation. And I really know that in my heart to be true. But we have to heal, and you have all these things that are happening in Indian country, and it's not past tense. It's still happening. And but I want to focus on the healing and what we could do for the people. And I'm really grateful that you're here to touch base on that, because you're out there. You're in the trenches, and you're doing the work, and you're helping the people come back into that wholeness. And I really appreciate that, and I want to raise my hands to you for doing that for the people. And we can start there if you'd like.
Yeah, well, I raise my hands back to you, because I'm not alone. There are quite a few people out there doing this good work. In fact, I work with the Native Wellness Institute. When I say work, I'm on the board, and it's a working board. And some of the best trainers in the United States in terms of wellness who are walking their talk. And when I say walk your talk, I mean clean and sober, working their anger issues, looking at bullying, looking at language that disenfranchises us, looking at issues that tear us apart. Some of the board, and I pray to sweet creator that I remember their names. We have Theda Newbrest, who has been one of the foremost trainers in wellness, FAS, FASE, working some of the leaders when we first were discovering what fetal alcohol syndrome disorder was. Cecilia Firethunder, a former chief for the Lakota Nation in South Dakota. Charlie, White Feather, there it is. Jillian Joseph of Grovant. We have Jay LaPlante. We have quite a few. You know, golly, go to www.nativewellness.com and on there, look on about, and you can figure out who all these troublemakers are. But more importantly, we have mentors. We have an elder circle that guide us. And in that elder circle, we have people who guide us, who keep us in line. Harold Belmont, he's one of the people that we look to that, you know, I talk to him, Theda talks to him, Amanda Olcrow, who works with us. We have quite a few people. I'm drawing a blank right now, but there it is. And I've been working with them for a long time. And I also have been privileged to be doing this work for a long time. And I came to it through nursing. And the more I talk to different people, they come to it from nursing or from medicine. I was taught our songs, but I also know how to take a temperature. And that has served me in knowing how to take care of our people and working with our people. You had asked me to come here and talk about trauma. Yeah. And so I'll define trauma and then multi-generational, and we'll go down the line. And just so that everybody's on the same page, trauma is when you experience an event where you believe you're going to die, or you have an event where it's very traumatic to you. It can be a car accident. It could be getting beat up on the street. It could be your parents yelling at you at when you were a child and not knowing why you were being yelled at, or witnessing argument, or somebody actually getting shot like some of our people see.
Or like you were saying earlier, because there's been a lot of bullying going on.
Yes.
I want to talk about that too, because that's weighing heavy on my heart.
Yes.
Seeing that happen.
Well, all of those things, sometimes they stack up. They stack up. And when we look at multi-generational trauma, we're looking at when a trauma occurs, and if that trauma is not resolved, such as when our medicine people would do ceremony for us and to sing it or to dance it, or to do ceremony around it, that hurt gets passed on from one generation to the next, spiritually, physically, emotionally, and mentally. And what we're learning now, and what our medicine people told us before, is that it also gets passed on genetically. And now, through science, we know that there's actual genetic markers that wind up on your DNA from any traumatic event that happens spiritually, physically, but even the water that you drink if it's poisoned, even if the next four generations don't drink that water or wind up next to that DDT or that PBAs that are in the water bottles that we drink, it gets passed on, and you can still find the marker four generations later.
Absolutely, and I just want to reiterate that in doing this healing, we don't have to carry it anymore, and people have carried it for us, so I just think it's important for us to know that to the generations that are here, we don't need to carry that, but we need to heal it and we need to acknowledge it, and that's what we're talking about today.
And I'm glad to hear you say acknowledgement, because some people go, "Well, didn't that stuff happen in the past? You know, that massacre, it happened so many years ago, and I didn't do it." But part of it is like, what do you mean by genocide? So, not my definition. So, what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you right now the United Nations definition of genocide. It's any of the following acts committed with the intent to destroy in whole or part a national, ethnical, racial, religious group, and includes five types of criminal action: killing the members of a group, causing serious bodily harm or mental harm to members of the group, deliberately inflicting on this group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or part, imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group, and to forcibly transfer the children of that group to another. And when we think of what happened here on Turtle Island, and when I talk about Turtle Island, I'm talking about the United States, Canada, Mexico, South America, Central America, all the way to the north. This and more has happened, even by the United Nations definition of genocide here in America.
And it's still happening.
Still happening.
I want to make put that out there, that it is still happening.
Yes.
And maybe not to some degree, but it's still happening, folks.
Well, just even in your classroom books, when they don't acknowledge that these things have happened, or they minimize it, or they still refer to your people as savages. I mean, we have study after study where a fourth grader is excelling, doing well in school, but when they get to that history in fourth grade and they see their people minimized, or they see the history minimizing the pain, or they see their people called savages or animals, their spirit shrinks, and those kids who were doing A work and excelling, their spirit shrinks and they're re-traumatized in that moment. Because all of a sudden they're not recognized. They're not a whole human being. And I've even known of children who then on the playground go, "Oh, you're a savage, aren't you, Indian?" And it's even there. So there's a whole education around the academic materials that we're using.
Yeah, and I want to just mention that I took a workshop a couple weeks ago up in Seattle. I actually thought I was going up to see Sherman Alexie speak, but there was like 600 people in the room. But I actually went there to set with IndianEd.org, Denny Hurtado, and a lady named Shauna Brown, who's Yakima. And Denny works, works for OSPI, and they have a whole curriculum now that is identifying all this,
yes,
that we need to have in every school, not just these pilot schools.
Yes.
Check it out. It's Indian/ed.org. It's amazing. They have this log on it, and has all these things that Maria is talking about, little dots, these reference points. And when you click on them, it goes to these things that you're talking about.
Yes.
It's so well done. I think everyone needs to check it out.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. But in recognizing the hurt and knowing some about this, the awesome part is that, yes, it attaches to us genetically, but what's also awesome to know is that just as our genetics can be switched off, by following our traditional ways, we can get healthy, and I say for the next seven generations. And the best thing that we can do is to live well and follow that medicine wheel spiritually, physically, emotionally, and mentally. And maybe I'll speak a little to that.
Yeah, can we talk a little bit about the medicine wheel? Because I'm, just familiarize some people that might not be so familiar with it.
Well, if you can imagine a clock, and then in the four cardinal points of the clock, you would have spiritual on one side, say at 3 o'clock. At 6 o'clock, you would talk about the things that are physical. At 9 o'clock, you would, on this wheel, that you would look at the things that are emotional. And at 12 o'clock, you would talk about the things that are mental. And what I mean by that is that, and mind you, that the medicine wheel doesn't belong to all of our tribes. Some of them call it a wellness wheel. Some call it a medicine wheel. But what I've learned in working with different groups is that we have this concept of these four energies, these four areas that we look at, whether we use a wheel or we use a hand. In the Southwest, we use a hand. And we need all of the fingers and all the digits of our hand. And if one of them is missing, our hand, it can do okay, but it doesn't do as well. So in spiritual, we talk about prayer, acknowledging the day, taking that moment to give thanks for the light, the water, the earth. In physical, we use this wonderful body that we were given to walk, to exercise, to take that time to use our precious body. What do they say? What you don't use, you lose. So even just getting out there, making sure you drink good water, making sure that you rest, making sure that you take care of yourself, good things. And when I say water, I always think of Olympia and this precious water that we have down here, and access to the water is important. So if we go to the other section of emotional, is making sure that we take care of ourselves emotionally. Do we have a buddy to talk to? Do we go towards the end of the day? I look at the end of the day of like Bear, going within. Did I do a good job? Did I say hello to people? Was I helpful? Was I able to maintain balance within myself today? And in the north, mentally, I say, am I keeping myself active? Am I learning new things? Even at, I'm 57 and I'm still learning how to spell. I'm playing Scrabble right now just to keep myself mentally alert, and I play Sudoku and just to stay sharp. Try to learn some new things.
Absolutely. I can't spell either. I'm glad my wife's out there. Outside, people would really go, what's up with that guy?
No. What's interesting is a lot of First Nations, if English is not our first language, or if another language is spoken in the home, spelling kind of falls off the table, if you will.
What's my excuse?
Well, even if we spoke English in the home, but if there was other languages, even like in my house, both my father's tribe and my mother's family, they spoke Spanish. So there was that language there. But even if they hadn't spoke Spanish, but they had the remnants of the language, what happens in some of our tribes, we're not fluent in our language. But a good example is like in Ebonics, for our Black brothers and sisters, they have Black colloquialisms and bits of language that are specific to our Black community. Mm-hmm. That is still a second language. You're still living in a home that has a second language. So then your spelling is impacted by that. It's impacted by it. And there's some games that I play with some of the groups that I play in to look at perspective and then how we're impacted by that second language. You know, English is not our first language.
Yeah, it's for most people, it's the second language.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
that's a part I think also is for me, when you talk about the trauma, I think that's a part of the trauma, also the language. I've always thought this, and that it's a dominator's language. And in the language, I know it's the only language I speak, but it's not. It's just, I don't know how I'm trying to say it, but it's very violent. You know, the way it's
yeah.
set up, it's a dominating thing. So there's. It's hard to, like, say some things. Marshall Rosenberg, you know, he talks about the language, you know, and how you can talk a different language in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I'm blanking on it, but it's...
Well, there's some fantastic writers, and when I was going to school here at Evergreen State College, I'm an alum, we were given the book to read, The Enemy's Language. And man, did it divide the class. It divided us. We were like, what? What do you mean? And they go, well, it's not just this is not anti-white. It's not against white people or people of European descent. But it was the enemy's language that we had our own tribal languages. And then came in Spanish and French and English and Russian and Portuguese. And all these different languages took us away from our languages that describe the water, that describe the mountains. And I love what our brother Robert is talking about, to reclaiming the names of an area. Because I got to go down to Lincoln City last week, and I was working down there, and I was learning the history of the Coos people and the Siletz people and the history. And one of the early, superintendents down there, even he realized in 1857, he said, these people, when they're dying of a depression. He called it that. He goes, it's as if they're dying because they're not on their land. And it was 27 years after that they outlawed our languages. Yeah. You got to remember, they outlawed our languages. They outlawed our spirituality. And that's some of the trauma.
Right, and they took out most of the holy men and the holy women. And
they were the first one. Somehow they knew that if they killed these people or removed them from us, they were the ones who could kiss the hurt and make it all better.
They were the balance.
They were the balance, absolutely. And we're learning more and more every day. how trauma does affect us. For instance, Dr. Yehuda in New York was doing some study with mice. And she was primarily working with people who were Holocaust survivors and their children. And they kept testing these children and saying, well, their cortisol levels are pretty high. But, oh, God bless these scientists. She was thinking that perhaps the children were being re-traumatized by the parents retelling the story of what happened to them in the concentration camps. Well, 9/11 happens. And she was working with Dr. Pembrey, who has done some other fantastic work in Sweden in regards to trauma and how it gets passed on. And that's a whole, oh my God, other story. But anyway, 9/11 happens. So now she doesn't have to work with the mice because they were testing mice and traumatizing mice. And that's a cruelty on a whole other level. So what happens is they put a call out to women who were pregnant and in New York when 9/11 happened. They tested the blood of the children, and this is an ongoing study, and the cortisol level, which is an indicator for stress, was 4 times higher than what it normally is. 7 years later, it's still elevated. So they're going to continue the study for these young people all the way to where they have children and grandchildren. If what was shown with mice 4 generations down the line, even without re-traumatizing,
they carry it.
They carry it in their genes. And when we talk to our people, our Indian people, and I tell them about this stuff, I go, who do you know has had their land taken away, been traumatized like these mice in these cages, where they don't get enough food, they don't get enough water, and then they crowd them like they did a lot of us on reservations or our ancestors on reservations, and then reduce food supplies and make us move again. I said, what do you think is happening in our genetics? And the light bulb goes on like, well, if this 9/11 study that Dr. Yehuda did is proving this, what can we do? If it's in my genetics, what can I do? I said, what you can do is live well, love well, make sure you rest. And it's paramount that you eat good food, organic food, pure food. Get enough rest. Take care of yourself. Take the time. Right now, the trees are gorgeous. If you have not walked in the fall leaves right now, get out there. And even when it's raining, get out. That's medicine. What we're learning is getting out in nature is medicine. I was just with a community in South Dakota. And because we're poisoned by our Xboxes and our TVs and our cable, and we need to get out. Even I'm guilty of that. And I have to remember, and I thank Creator for my dog. So I have to get away.
have to get out.
We have to get out. And that's medicine.
Absolutely. I could just attest to that. I know when we don't get out and we're off our schedule, I promised that we'd take a walk every Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. Well, we were all at each other. You know, there's 4 of us in the house. We got 2 mm-hmm. little kids. And like I said, let's just take a walk in the woods. The minute we hit the earth, it was done. It was like whatever was anybody was like, it was gone. You know, like, we had to do this. But, you know, like you said, we're guilty of not falling through sometimes.
We actually have to schedule it. Mm-hmm. When I was with those kids in Lincoln City, I asked them, I go, hey, when was the last time you laid on the grass and actually did it? And a third of the room raised their hand, which is awesome, because when I ask that of our adults, our Native adults that come to the well, it's a minority that will raise their hand. And I go, man, you guys are doing better than us adults. Some of us haven't laid on the grass in years, and it's medicine.
Yeah.
Even just walking in silence.
Yeah, it reconnects us to the source of who we are. You know, we're of the earth, and it brings us back into that.
Well, it sounds simplistic, Brian. It sounds simplistic, but even if you get some water, and I'm reaching down for my water right now, and we had Dr. Emoto here recently, and we were down at the water, and it was so great to see all the peoples there. And in the most simplest terms, and I praise this man because he reminds us to bless the water. And this was how we were taught to live. And we've forgotten it, but I'm glad he came here and Grandmother Margaret was there, and a lot of other people were there, and brothers and sisters who I haven't even met. But even like in my little stainless steel bottle I got here right now, I've got water from the well. But before I drink it, I thank it, and I bless it, and then I bless it to my body, because this is medicine.
Yeah. And we're very lucky to be here at Olympia to have an artesian well right downtown that's free-flowing. And we have to always remember to say thank you for that water. And because there's a lot of places that don't have that specific spot, and we have to take care of it. I just wanted to throw that in there because Grandmother Margaret and Dr. Emoto and a lot of the elders that were there, like, we have to keep that place clean. And
yes,
like you were saying, and do that prayer, because water is the key source. You know, all the other elements, I know they're important, but water is the key.
Well, you know, when we do our ceremonies, we can go for days without eating. We can go for days without eating when they put people on the hill, or if you're doing Sundance or whatever the ceremonies we are, if people go into Brush House or in the kivas. But you need that water. We need that water. We're born from it. And if we don't have it, we go out of balance. We go out of balance.
Absolutely. And I just want to say that you're listening to KAOS 89.3 FM. I'm here with Berea Treviso. It's 5:30, and this is Make No Bones About It. And I just wanted to say, as we were talking, I posted a quote a couple of days ago, and Maria, this has just struck the nerve in me, and I just wanted to put this out there. It's by Bill James Lummy. Never met the guy, but I wish I would have. And it says here, "Our culture is still alive. Our people do exist. We no longer physically occupy the islands, but our ancestry is there. The spirits of the ancestors are there. We relate to the area and the spirit of the place. People need to take the time to learn where the tribes and the people are today and learn the real history of why we are where we are."
Hmm.
And it just made me think of that when you were talking about the trauma.
Mm.
And it brought it home to me, that quote. And if we could do that acknowledgement, so much is done just from that.
Absolutely. You had asked me, you know, how do we celebrate wellness? And I'm going to speak to some of the processes that were contributed by relatives. In fact, I'm going to do a shout out to Harold Belmont, one of my uncles, and who helped design the Gona. And the name was Gathering of Native Americans, but our brothers and sisters up in Alaska are calling it the Gathering of Alaskan Natives. So each community is owning it. Each community is recognizing it, and it comes in four parts. So I'm going to take a minute and go over those four parts, and they're pretty basic because it comes from us. So the first part is belonging, and in belonging, just like in all of our ceremonies or our gatherings and stuff, we make people feel like they belong there. I mean, it's the hellos, how are you? This is where you can sit. Sometimes when we come into a smokehouse that we're not from there, we need to be told where to sit or what we can do, so we're not just like looking around, looking like Felix the cat, like, can I be here? And that happens. Somebody to usher us in. And it's a time where we share our songs. In belonging, we tell our stories. We remember that it takes teamwork in our families. And we tell the family stories. Sharing the family stories helps us remember who we are and to tell our creation stories. And I don't care how many times I travel around this beautiful country, I love hearing our creation stories. And it winds up being the same story, just told in a different way. And it's awesome. It's awesome. And with that, it starts bringing our traditional knowledge, which is important because it's the healing. That's the medicine. You know, it's like the betadine or the creams you put on there, and it's the medicine. When you know this is what grandma used to do, or this is what great grandpa used to do, or our uncles, and having that information, it's medicine. And maybe you were like, I didn't know that. And inevitably you hear somebody, oh, I didn't know that, or they hear the story again, or they hear some new information.
Absolutely. And what you're doing, it makes me feel is like you're creating a sacred space for people to feel comfortable and to be able to do that.
And that's belonging. In fact, I'm going to reach back to Harold again. He says this one thing that always just touches my heart, and I remember it, and I hear him saying it, and he goes, we need each other so much that we don't even know how much we need each other.
Yeah.
I mean, when he says that, and it just like, it catches me to the core. And you can be in these malls or in these mega theaters, or you could be down in Seattle or wherever, or when I'm traveling in these airports, and people are just lonely. They're just lonely. So as we go through belonging, I mean, if you learn nothing else, make or help people feel welcome. And that's what my Papa Leo, he used to say. He goes, Mary, our assimilation name, they call me Mary. He goes, make sure you say hi to the people. You might be the only person that says hello to somebody, and they might die tonight.
Absolutely. It reminds me of what my dad used to tell me all the time, you know, acknowledge people, and not everybody's going to be your best friend, but everyone deserves to be acknowledged.
Yes.
And in that acknowledgement, you make that person happy.
Yeah. Just before I came here, I was down at our new dog park here in West Olympia, off of Bush Street. And if you watch the dogs sometimes, they'll all go to greet the new dog that comes in. They'll all go over there, and I'm not saying we have to sniff around each other, but even the dogs go and greet each other. You know, they don't ignore him or her as she walks into that new area. And it's cute. Even the animals know to acknowledge each other.
Absolutely.
So I talked about belonging. The next part of this healing curriculum is mastery. And in mastery, we talk about the cultural knowledge, the cultural information. And I'm reminded of this gentleman when we were up in Norvik, Alaska, and he'd been working with the high school, like, oh, I want to come in here and help these kids learn this stuff and this and that. And they were going, well, no. And he wanted to teach them to do the dog sleds. And they're going, no, we got skidoo nows. We're modern now. We don't need to know how to do these dog sleds. Well, remember a couple of years ago when the gasoline got really high?
Uh-huh.
Well, it was $12 in Alaska. And guess who they called to come in and teach him to make dog sleds? Well, they called him in, and so they're both the boys and the girls, young men and women, are learning how to make the dog sleds, and then he showed them how to make dip nets.
I thought he was going to say, hey, you got skidoos now.
No, that man was generous, because I even have pictures of him.
And so many of the our people are. And
yeah.
And that's like a core value.
Absolutely. And he could have been stinky and said, well, no, I'm not going to tell you. But no, old school is, you make yourself humble, and you know, that's a good lesson for all of us. But he got in there, but he also takes the opportunity to teach the kids stories and personal stories, stories of survival, healing stories, and exploring our generational patterns. Well, a pattern I talk to people about is like, well, how old were your parents when they got married? How did your family court? What are the patterns in your family? Like, some families are carpenters, and some are mechanics, so learn to work with that. Some family are singers. Some families are, like my family, we're MacGyvers. We like to fix things. So as long as I got a roll of duct tape and some baling wire, I'm good. In fact,
I'm terrible.
Well, it works out. But you have your grace. Not everybody does these radio station things like you do. That's your grace.
I was blessed that I had somebody as like Gary Galbraith that said, yeah, you can shadow me for months and months and months.
But see, that's your grace. You get to do that. That's your talent. And to have everybody come in here and tell their stories, what they're good at.
It's fun. It's like you said, it's the whole sharing. And it's like what Robert Sadiakam always says. I have all these aha moments.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, that's it. That's what I needed to hear. And I know if I'm feeling it, everybody else is feeling it. And when you're talking, I just hear myself in my head, like, I know these, like, we've all been touched by colonialization.
Yes.
Everyone. And I hear Uncle Phil in my head, too. The hurt of one is the hurt of all.
Yes.
And to do this work, it's amazing.
Well, it's almost, it's like we're reaching back and say, well, how else can we heal? Outrageously, what we're learning is that playing is necessary for healing. And at NWI, the Native Wellness Institute, when we get together, we'll have a meeting. And like at 90 minutes, we'll get up and we'll do a stretch. We'll go, okay, everybody has to do a move. And we'll be doing this fake, and I'm holding my fingers up, fake yoga. And everybody has to come up with a move. And everybody tries to be creative just to move. Yeah. And of course, somebody falls over or is out of balance or whatever. And we laugh. But laughter is healing.
Yeah, it's the best medicine.
But actually getting and playing with each other. Absolutely, it is medicine. Mm-hmm. Our traditional songs, our traditional dances, that is part of that development for balance and inclusion and bringing the songs back out. So playing is vital. Our cultural activities.
Yeah, it reminds me also, like, and I can't remember the elder that I was sitting with, and just that what I'm feeling in my being is in order for us to go further, we have to mirror everything that our ancestors did.
Absolutely.
And that's what that I'm seeing that you're doing.
Yes.
And so we have to go back and mirror everything so we can heal. And when we heal, Mother Earth will heal.
Absolutely. And that's part of it, to do our dances, whether it's a stomp dance, whether you're Kashaya doing the Pomo dances or Miwok or Maidu, wherever we are, if you're Cherokee. And I am so blessed that some of the kids that I worked with when they were 6 and 7 years old are my friends on Facebook now, and they're doing the dances. They're carrying it forward. And I'm humbled by that part of my legacy in supporting our young people. I just wrote to a friend of mine. I'm going to do a shout out to, he used to be Armando Pinola. He's now Armando Williams, and he's doing a lot of education around Pomo Nation in California, in Sebastopol, and just got the Sebastopol people to acknowledge October as Pomo Nation month.
All right.
And
good work.
Shout out to Armando there. And I wrote to him and I go, Armando, I love you. And he writes back and he goes, I knew that when I was 7 years old when you told me that. And I just like, wow, dude, the wellness.
Yeah.
So I really support healthy activities such as the canoe journeys. That's medicine. Every pull of that paddle, praying for our people, medicine. So if somebody is the chauffeur for that, I hold my hands up to them because they're helping the future generations. They're helping these young people, these old people. They're supporting. Or if you donate food to that effort, and I know our canoes are going to be, you know, needing some help in the coming months, starting to get ready, you know, the food for that, gasoline money, support, you know, financial support for that.
Absolutely. And I wanted just to say, I know my brother down in California, Ray Ward Tumash, they're coming up in June with their Tomol.
Oh.
And so I'm excited, you know, all this. And one of the things that I also like, I love what you do, is the bringing everyone in.
Yes.
And that weaving with all the people coming together.
Oh, man.
And, I mean, you're all over Indian country.
Yes.
You know, if you're on Facebook, you'll see where Maria is. She's all over. And so I'm glad that you're here in Olympia.
No, in fact, on Monday, I have a conference call with my relatives, Chumash. You know, we're going to look at doing some healing, a TOT, training of trainers.
All right.
Because it's nothing for us to come in and do a training. I mean, it's awesome. It's great. But it's about capacity, raising capacity so that then they do their own healing. They do their own training. But it has to be congruent. You have to be clean and sober. You have to be walking your talk. You can't do this work and go home and beat up your partner. Or kick the dog, or belittle your children, or bully them, or tell them if they're gay, they're going to hell. I mean, how many of our youth have to die because they're two-spirit for us to get it that, you know, like you said, the honor of one is the honor of all of us, but the hurt of one of us is the hurt of all of us.
Absolutely. It's another one of core values.
Yes.
And we have to come back to those core values.
Yes.
And again, this we are. It's let's see here, 5:45, and just make no bones about it. This is KAOS 89.3 FM, and we got about 15 minutes, and then G Dub should be in the house with View from Ashore. I'm here with Maria Treviso, and we're talking about intergenerational trauma, focused on the healing, and yeah,
and we do know. I mean, when we talk about, we say. What tore our world apart? And we know that. We know what tore our world apart. And if you don't know what tore your world apart, look at your history. Talk to your elders. But today we're talking about how do we heal our world? And for each community, it's different. And for some of us, it's getting back the stories. You know, how did we heal? How did we help each other? What is putting us together? I was up in... Alakanuk, Alaska, in wintertime. And I'll tell you, for a Pueblo being up there, Pueblo Purapecha, up in Alaska, it is different. Because I had my big woolly parka and everything, and I had my little shoes, and I'm walking out there, and it's 20 below, and the most strangest things happen to me. And all of a sudden, I go, okay, everybody stop. And we stop, and I breathed in, and my little nose hairs, they froze. And then I breathed out, and they thawed out. And see, I wouldn't have known that if I just stayed in Olympia or stayed in California. But so if you ever go north of the circle, yeah, that, you can expect that.
Man, I know I'd freeze.
But we heard a story there, and I was up there because of suicides. A lot of suicides happening all over the place. I mean, I'm glad they're telling the stories of these different people killing themselves on the news. That they're. I'm not glad that they killed them. I'm glad that they're telling what's going on. But it's an epidemic in Indian country, and it has been for a long time. But a couple of uncles were there, and they told us about there was a time when this village, the Alakanuk village, the people were starving to death. And this one man went out, and the caribou hadn't come. The swans had not come through. The Canadian geese hadn't come through. Just the animals that they would get to eat, they hadn't come through. Well, long story short, he sees two swans in a pond, and they're shallow ponds. And he sacrifices himself, and he takes off his parka, and he takes off his waterproof pants. They make him out of seal. And he immerses himself into that cold water. Well, we know how it is getting in the water around here. It takes your breath away. With sacrifice, he gets in that water, and he swims out, not disturbing those swans, and he comes up underneath them. And he grabs them, each by a leg, and they come shooting out of the water. They're trying to flap for their lives, and he's hanging on to them because his people are starving. He gets them to the shore, and he sacrifices the birds, and he offers prayers. And the village was able to eat those swans. They're sucking on the marrow, and they're almost done, and still the animals hadn't come back. And just as they're ready to give up, the caribou come through. And the elder that told us this story, he goes, I'm telling this story because we survived almost starving to death. And I tell this story for us, he said, because our people are suiciding. But I offer it as hope that if we can make it through a bleak time and we had nothing in those days, what can we do with this resource and with people coming from the outside to help us? And there, right there, they started some suicide support groups. They were inspired by this 80-year-old man telling the story that hadn't been told in 70 years. And we need to tell our stories.
Absolutely. That's one of the things that the West has forgotten to do. All of us are storytellers, every single one of us.
That's right.
And we have to get up and do it. You talked about, like, me being on the air. If you had asked me this 10 years ago, I'd say, uh-uh. I'm not going to do this, you know, but this is a part of my story.
Absolutely.
And I also want to do what Creator wants me to do. Mm-hmm. And putting these out there, like, you know, you're telling your story, and that I know it's uplifting me. I know it's uplifting other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to continue to do that.
Well, it's like what Gene Tagaban says. He's, you're the story. And he'll do this thing where he goes, hey, are you a storyteller? And you clap your hands, you go, I'm a storyteller. Each up one of us. And I love when he does that with the kids, because they'll clap their hands and they'll point to the, he goes, I'm a storyteller. And it's an awesome thing to see when somebody gets at that. I can tell a story too.
Absolutely.
And maybe the story is about our ceremonies, what it was like to be at that ceremony, sharing ourselves, even to humble ourselves, to be quiet in a moment in a talking circle, looking at ourselves, identifying problems, more importantly, creating solutions, and starting to have a healthy community vision. And that's why I came today, because I have a vision for our community, and I know there's a lot of people out there saying, I know that we have some concerns, I know we have some challenges, but I also know we have some opportunities for healing in our communities.
Yeah, and I'm with you, and I think that we have to come back into the ceremonies.
Mm-hmm.
And bring, because like last year we had, during Thanksgiving, we had the first annual sunrise ceremony here in Olympia,
yes.
And I realized 55 people in the pouring down rain, and the diversity that was there, you know, and I said this earlier, everybody's been touched by colonialization. We all have a certain part that we have to heal. But in that sacred space, people let go and let go of it. And when we also can see, everybody gets a chance to tell their story and release it. And people, that acknowledgement, and I just really think that we have to, that's how we have to heal.
Well, we're all here on Turtle Island. And what I like about the gatherings that I've been with you is that everyone is welcome. Everyone has been welcome in those circles. And that's that last part. We talked about belonging, mastery, and interdependence, where we tell our stories and work together. The last part is generosity. And that's what we do with each other. We're generous with our time. We're generous in how we say good morning to each other. That's an act of generosity, to acknowledge someone.
Right. In creating what my brother Ray would say, who's Chumash, creating circles of inclusiveness.
Yes.
It's really key, important, because in the circle, there's another core value. In the circle, there's no hierarchy. Everyone belongs. And our people knew that. All our people, because if you go anywhere in the world, there were tribal people that were there long before anybody else. And they knew this. And that's the medicine, is when we're in that circle, that we're all the same. And that we are sharing, and you know, the hurt of one is the hurt of all. And so we, in the circle, we can heal together, because if we're all feeling it, you know, like I'm a mixed blood. I don't know a lot of things about my other side because of what happened, the colonialization of command and stuff. But I'm relearning, and as I sit in circles and I hear these stories, I went, oh, because I it kicks something in my DNA,
right?
And I went, okay, I get that.
And a couple of months ago, I was in Hawaii. I was invited to speak on grief and loss at the Healing Our Spirit Worldwide. And it's a conference that happens every 4 years. It started off in Canada, and then it went to New Zealand, and it was in Hawaii for it to be in the U.S. again. And then we were in Hawaii, and it was 5 days of ceremony. And to be in downtown Honolulu, and to have everybody treating you like your brother and sister. I mean, I had so many chairs offered to me, even on the buses. I almost didn't want to leave because of how everybody was so generous with each other.
Pictures were great, too.
Pardon?
Your pictures were great.
Oh, my pictures were great. What was great is because they did the canoe journey. They did the welcome there for the dignitaries coming in. And what I learned there was like the story of the Australians. And it's not just one Aboriginal people. They have of about 300 different Aboriginal bands and tribes. And some of them know about kangaroos, but some of them are from the ocean, and they don't know nothing about kangaroos. And it was like, oh, dude, I was being so ethnocentric, thinking that you were like what people think about Indians, that we're only one group and everybody wears a headdress. I was doing the same thing to our Aboriginal brothers and sisters of Australia. And that's where the next gathering is going to be in. Actually, they're trying to speed it up to not have it be 4 years. I think they're going to try for 2013, but then they heard about 2012. I think with a lot of help, they might make the next gathering in 2012, because, like, how can you ask people to wait 4 years to be fed spiritually?
Yeah, should be every day.
Well, you know, I say every day is a ceremony, and each moment that you feed yourself actual food or water is an opportunity for ceremony, is an opportunity to pray.
Right. It's about life. being a ceremony. Absolutely.
Life is a ceremony.
Yes.
And
remembering that.
That's the trick. It is about remembering. And again, you know, just so people remember, spiritual, physical, emotional, mental. What are we doing going around that clock? How am I taking care of myself spiritually? How am I taking care of myself physically? What am I doing to take care of myself emotionally and mentally? Because if you're just out of balance, maybe you're just focusing on spiritual, but you're not being physical and taking care of yourself, or you're not taking care of yourself emotionally or exercising yourself mentally, you're going to be out of balance.
Yeah, you need everything.
Everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And we just got a few more minutes, and I appreciate you coming in and sharing with us. I hope that we can do this again sometime. And I wanted to go out with the theme song of Native Wellness, but if you have one thing that you...
Well, I want to say that I want to thank one of the early teachers who got me on this, and he's long passed, but his name is Dr. Phil Tingley. And he's the one who did some of the earliest work. And based on Dr. Phil Tingley's work, Eduardo Duran and Bonnie Duran and a lot of other people, but he was the foundation, and I have to acknowledge him, because I didn't dream this stuff up, but he spoke the words that, like you said, your heart tingled and you went, whoa, this has meaning to me. And I just really wanted to call him out, because he wrote some good stuff when it wasn't popular with IHS, and he spoke to us about sovereignty and our responsibility is as dual citizens to really exercise our voice. And with that, I remember, and I'm reminded that we got the vote. It was given to us in 1924. And I really want to remind my relatives to vote on Tuesday. If you haven't voted, please vote. Vote carefully. And pray for everyone out there who is making that leap of trust to try to represent us out there, whether it's for Congress or senators or whatever.
Absolutely. Okay. And again, this is Make No Bones About It. And I wanted to finish with this theme song here. I played it a couple times. I like it.
I like it too.
It's Arlie Neskai.
Arlie Neskai. Arlie.
And here we go. And thank you again, Maria.
Thank you, brother.